This is a summary of Reader, Come Home by bestbookbriefings.com. Reader, Come Home, The Reading Brain in a Digital World, Marianne Wolfe. Letter 1. Reading, The Canary in the Mines. Learning how to read was a profound cultural and cognitive shift in the history of human beings. Reading has the capacity of changing the course of one's life. Most of us know how to read, and thanks to recent research and books, like Marianne Wolfe's Proust and the Squid, How the Brain Learns to Read and How Reading Changes the Way We Think and Feel was finally revealed. And that allowed all reading brains to move from adoring the charm of written words to the appreciation of the underlying science, and thus discover reading in an unprecedented way. We began to understand why it's easier for some adults and children to read than others. We realized how getting immersed in pages and letters spark innovation and originality and broaden perception. But if merely knowing the mechanism of how the brain learns to read had such a profound effect on us, what would do the shift to the digital realm? Have you ever asked yourself what would happen to children or adults who learn to read via a digital medium they stare at for 6 to 7 hours a day, if not more? Will the vital cognitive processes of deep reading, such as imagination, empathy, and critical thinking, be delayed by daily immersion in a variety of digital experiences? Will children still be keen enough to store and memorize knowledge while surrounded by multiple sources of immediate data? On the other hand, and optimistically speaking, is it possible that these digital mediums create unprecedented forms of cognition and allow the youth to move beyond imagination and create brain circuits unknown to us at the moment? All these concerns and hopes are discussed by Marianne Wolfe in this illuminating book. Equipped with recent research from neuroscience and education, she writes a book of letters, in the belief that letters allow for a kind of interactive thinking and communication with the reader. Each letter theme is carefully selected to arm the next generation with the basis of the autonomous life of the mind in an unpredictable world. The author's main focus is on how the characteristics of a digital medium can alter the circuitry of the reading brain. And since readers, and especially young ones, don't have a well-established program for developing reading brain circuits, natural and environmental factors play a role in shaping and developing such circuits, including the medium, book or screen. How we read and think is highly dependent on the type of processes which dominate the formation of children's reading circuits. In the hustle of digital transformation, we've lost our reading home. Her book is an invitation for readers on the merge to come back to their reading home. And only by means of protecting the contemplating nature of our reading brain can we survive and pass on wisdom. The author uses a metaphor that compares the reading brain to the canary in the mines, which alerts workers to danger. We shouldn't ignore the messages of the canary, or the reading brain. Letter 2, Unusual View of the Reading Brain. Basic capacities, like language and vision, have hardwired genes. That's why any language can be acquired by the child if put in a certain environment. It's a basic human function. But reading has a different story. We have to learn to read, i.e., every young brain needs to be motivated by an environment that connects basic and not basic processes in order for new reading circuits to be developed. Fortunately, the brain is inherently designed to learn many unnatural things thanks to its neuroplasticity, which is the hidden power that creates new circuits by connecting old ones, recycling existing neurons, and developing brand new brain circuits. Many factors influence the reading brain circuit: 1. What it reads, writing system and content; 2. How it reads, the medium and its effects; 3. How it's formed, methods of instruction. Aside from neuroplasticity, 2 other principles contribute to our ability to read. The first is the working groups of neuronal cells, which allow the cells to specialize in a particular function. In reading, for example, neuronal cells in the circuit's structural parts, like vision, build the networks that allow us to see the smallest unit of the letter. Whenever you read a single word, you operationalize thousands of neuronal working groups that were intended to recognize faces and objects. The other principle is the automaticity of connection. In order for reading to happen, neuronal networks should occur with high-speed automaticity. For example, the visual cortex makes rapid connections across the entire brain, specifically the language region, with millisecond precision. So, if hundreds of neurons activate for you to read only one word, can you imagine what happens when you read a whole sentence? Letter 3. Deep reading. Is it endangered? Allocation of time is key in both the formation and maintenance of a deep reading circuit. And to understand whether the switch to mediums that favor immediacy and task switching affects the quality of attention or not, we need to examine some of the deep reading processes which form the expert reading brain circuits. Empathy, the ability to put yourself in others' shoes, adapt their perspective, and share their feelings is one of the appreciated end results of the deep, deliberate reading. John S. Dunn, a narrative theologian, uses the term passing over to refer to this type of empathy, which, aside from connecting our senses, enriches our internal perception of the world. Recent research asserts that empathy between young people has witnessed a 40% decline, specifically in the last 2 decades. Sherry Turkle, an MIT scholar, attributes this recession to the increasing presence in the online world, which in return undermines their ability to connect, build face-to-face relationships, and relish in the real world. Technologies, according to her, changes not only who we are as individuals but also who we are with one another. Background knowledge. Our perception of the world determines where exactly we stand. Background knowledge, the sum of our well-established facts and opinions, is the basis of deep reading. According to Marianne, early exposure to the digital realm and excessive dependence on external knowledge shall put us under the weight of fake information and misleading knowledge. Perhaps this is why generating new points of view and evaluating new data are among the fundamental tools of the age. Deliberate reading empowers your ability to differentiate authentic knowledge from the false one. Marianne refers to the Matthew Emerson effect for background knowledge, which entails that people who widely read will have such large stock of knowledge to judge whatever meets the eye, while those who don't will have no ground to draw conclusions or analysis. Critical analysis. Critical thinking is the core of scientific method processes, since it combines content with background knowledge, analogies, and assumptions to draw conclusions. Therefore, the deliberate anchoring of critical reasoning is considered the main immunization tool for the young in the face of fake inputs, on screen or in books. Mark Edmondson, a literary scholar, laments the threat enshrined in the absence of a well-established personal belief system for many young people, as a result of their unwillingness and impatience to explore and derive from historical thinking systems, as of Sigmund Freud or Charles Darwin's contributions. This in return undermines their thinking, and therefore understanding, skills. Letter 4. The digital chain hypothesis. During the last decade, we all fell prey to what Marianne refers to as the digital chain. We jump from one screen to another, one distraction to another, with no time out to nurture neither the eye nor the memory. Her chain consists of 3 connected elements. 1. How much we read. According to a study conducted by the Global Information Industry Center at the University of California, to measure the amount of information we consume on a daily basis, the average person consumes about 34 gigabytes across varied devices, which offset 100,000 words a day. Roger Bond comments on this fact, saying that our attention is being chopped into shorter intervals. Marianne finds these times chop-block are adding nothing to deep reading or thinking. Sure, we're reading now more than ever, but this form of reading is casual, interrupted, and unsustainable. For most young people, dense information and texts have become merely a diversion from other forms of entertainment. What's worse is that they've lost the desire to exert any effort in seeking valuable information. Why bother oneself while easy alternatives are everywhere? The author worries that this generation's cognitive capabilities will remain inactive, and these worries converge with the scientific idea that information stays at the surface when received as a form of entertainment, consequently hindering deep thinking. 2. How we read. In a research program, held by the Norwegian scholar Anne Mongen, with the aim of designating the differences between screen and print reading, participating students were asked to read and answer questions about an appealing short story. Half the students read the story on a Kindle, while the other half read the paperback. The second half showed a greater ability to reconstruct the plot chronologically, i.e., the digital screen students lost the sequence of minute details. Mongen ascribed this to the temptation of skipping and skimming in screen reading, along with screen shortage of the spatial dimensions of hard copy books that connect text and visual images to long-term memory. 3. What we read. Young people are now accustomed to abbreviated forms of everything, literally. Why would they care about reading massive volumes of historical writers, like Eliot, while their highest hope is to express their thoughts in 140 characters maximum on Twitter? Even sentences in best-selling modern books, regardless of the genre, are less than half the length of those in the early to mid-20th century. Young people are diagnosed with a shortage of what the author calls cognitive patience. Their prolonged presence on social media caused their writing to degrade, not to mention reading and analysis. And when the quality of reading declines and complex intellectual skills stagnate, so does thinking, rendering them less prepared for the future. Letter 5. The raising of children in a digital age. Marianne is more concerned with achieving the best for our children in this high-demanding, fast-changing era. She realizes that what happened has happened, there is no backing out. However, this truth shouldn't inhibit our endeavors to perceive who we used to be, what changes shape our children, and how to empower them to cope up. Patricia Greenfield, a UCLA psychologist, argues that humans, and especially children, recapitulate the characteristics of any medium they spent most of their time with. The medium, according to him, is the messenger to the cortex, and it begins to shape it from the very start. The average time 3 to 5 year old children spend on digital devices, based on a 2015 RAND report, was 4 hours a day, with 75% of children from 0 to 8 years old having access to digital devices, a figure that was up from 52% only 2 years earlier. Concerning adults, their use of digital devices magnified by 117% in 1 year. And since children at this age have limited prefrontal development and haven't yet witnessed the rewards of deliberate attention, they fall prey to the overwhelming number of distractions. Boredom is the pretext for most children to embrace their digital screens. It is divided into two types: natural boredom that accompanies childhood and therefore stimulates creation and creativity, and culturally induced boredom that comes as a direct result of extreme digital exposure and undermines their willingness to explore the world outside. The grasshopper mind. Children's online grasshopper mind refers to their ability to jump from one distraction to another relentlessly. A study by the Dutch researchers, Maria de Jong and Adriana Buss, in the early 2000s, illustrates the cons of this phenomenon. During the 2000s, children either listened to a not enhanced text or an enhanced one with different attention attracting options. In the case of the enhanced text, 4 to 5 year old children responded with their hands and feet and body motion, rather than their prefrontal cortex, and played with the added elements, with little attention dedicated to the text, and lesser ability to concentrate on the narrative or remember details compared to the not enhanced text. To conclude, the distraction of attention affected memory, and ultimately comprehension. Children's internalized knowledge. The author relates to the award-winning author Maggie Jackson's reflective thoughts concerning information overload. She argues that the more information and visual stimuli a child is exposed to, the weaker his ability to build internalized knowledge, and the lesser the time necessary for him to rehearse, draw conclusions, store information, and respond. The more the tempo increases, the more attention scatters. This insight, when connected to the idea of the deep reading circuit, means the child will have no sufficient time to process and compare the input information with background knowledge, and that hinders the whole process of deep reading. Our responsibility. Before we indulge in what our responsibilities are, we need to acknowledge the fact that most of the 1 billion cell phone users are children. Fortunately, science and technology can go hand in hand to conclude the optimum use of all types of mediums for children from birth to adolescence. There is no room for side-taking and biases, and we need to cope up with the fast-paced changes thoughtfully. In the following letter, the author attempts to lay the basis of the perfect reading life she aspires for all children from infancy to 10 years. Letter 6. In the first 5 years, don't move too fast. Early stages of brain development favor feeling networks over cognition. The emotional part of an infant's memory, the amygdala, lays down its neural networks before the hippocampus does. Infants, contrary to common belief, have the ability to process language from day one. One research study examined the brain activation of two-month-old infants while they listened to their mothers speak, using one adaptation of fMRI. Researchers were astonished to see the activation of the same language network adults use for listening to speech, only a bit slower. Imagine how these regions will be affected when parents deliberately read to their children, with focused attention. Not only building blocks of reading are laid down, but also both the parent and child immerse in a priceless interaction sharing words, sentences, and concepts and paving the way for the infant's first acquaintance with the book. The author explains the gaze that appears on the face of the baby as one of the fascinating expressions of concentrated visual attention. First 2 years, every time you read to your child, he's exposed to words, sounds, phonemes, visual forms of letters, meanings, and all other components of the reading circuit. He gets familiar with seeing, touching, smelling, and hearing books. It's the lyrics, grammar of stories, limericks, and alliteration of rhymes that sticks to the mind and make all the difference. The author poses a contemplative question: what the human interaction has to offer that the digital device cannot? And what's the difference between the oral iteration of words and the digitally driven one? The answer is simple: physicality. Physical pages provide physical substance to cognitive and linguistic repetition and the recurring exposure to images and concepts necessary to background knowledge. No wonder for more than 4 decades, how much caregivers read to their children was the dominant predictor of later reading excellence. Based on these facts, exposure to digital devices before the child is 2 should be limited and never used as a reward, only present as any stuffed animal around. Between 2 and 5 years, parents and caregivers, just like the first 2 years, need to make reading stories every night a fixed habit, in order for children to transcend constraints of imagination. Humans by nature are storytellers, and the story is the first teacher of moral laws and problem-solving skills. Childhood stories lay the foundation for sympathizing with others and respecting their points of view, the same way the novels of adulthood do. Protecting the lost time of childhood. What about the free time children have at home or in preschool without any duties on their part? How to fill that empty space constructively? Here comes naturally the introduction of digital devices, which should occur in a gradual, well-thought manner. Our mission, according to the author, is to present such media the same way as the TV or music systems, merely as part of by default surroundings, and not as a pacifier. Sure, this is not an easy thing to deal with, but unless we fill the blank of our children's days and nights with the right habits, they will, as Marianne warns, automatically shift to screen mode. What and when? Deciding upon the appropriate applications and devices for the individual child, and choosing the right timing, is such a difficult task. One might find hundreds of apps under the label developmental or educational, but most of them truly aren't. When trying an app for the first time, the author suggests that parents play with their children for a few minutes to learn whether it's trusted and worthy or not. It's also an indicator of the child's interests, imagination stimuli, and developmental, and what aren't. The time amount of exposure to screens for a 2 to 3 year old, in her point of view, should be something between a few minutes and half an hour a day maximum. Older children may get more time, without exceeding a 2 hour frame. Individual differences should be put into consideration, and we have to be certain that there's no one-fits-all formula. Just be keen enough to immerse your child with child-directed play, sincere hugs, and storytelling book-driven nights. Digital books, pros and cons. Many recent studies have proven the negative effects of the interactive digital book on children, which vary from limiting their vocabulary storehouse to undermining their ability to comprehend content. Nevertheless, Adriana Buss has conducted recent research on a shared storybook, which came up with striking, counterintuitive results. Parents who support the vocabulary of their children during interactive digital formats leave a more favorable effect compared to what usually happens when children are left to navigate the screen on their own. A group of researchers at the MIT Media Lab invented the Tinkerbook research tool, which allows children to tinker with the text, in the form of touching words on the screen to hear it out loud, or see a visual image of an animal and influence its actions, bathing a duck. Researchers suggest that parents, by means of this tool, can fight against the long-standing cons of e-books, by investing in the development of vocabulary and elaboration of concepts. This is how a child's mind nurtures curiosity and achieves balance. Letter 7. Investment in early, ongoing assessment of students. Schools' most profound mission is to identify and classify children according to their disparate cultures and abilities, and their preparedness to learn. A group of researchers at the McGovern Institute for Brain Research at MIT conducted a large reading prediction study, which helps predict the performance of children in subjects like math and reading and identifies those in desperate need of careful monitoring. They examined around 1,000 kindergarten children from different economic levels. Each child was tested according to a large battery of educational measures. The outcome was astonishing. Differences between American children fall into discrete groupings, 6 profiles specifically, that predict how the children will achieve in reading later in school and how each group learns to read best. 2 of the profiles comprise children who are either average or very much above average and will need only good instruction to excel. Another group has difficulty with letters and sounds and may well come from environments where there is little exposure to the alphabet or the English language. We can redress these issues fairly straightforwardly. Some children in this group, however, may have rare visual-based difficulties that need further testing. The other 3 profiles include children who are expected to be diagnosed with some form of reading disability or dyslexia. Nothing is more important for those who study dyslexia than to predict it before the child has to go through shaming and daily public failures before peers, parents, and teachers. The child's feeling of dumbness that results from his inability to read like others, whether for biological or environmental reasons or both, deprives him of self-confidence. Early assessment of struggling young readers precludes their negative experiences and emotional disruption, so they can grow as influential, creative members of society. Investment in our teachers. Teachers stand on the front lines to confront the ever-increasing challenges of the age with no hesitation. Therefore, they need to be well-equipped and provided with high-level training. Together with accurate prediction tools and evidence-grounded interventions, they could be the life preservers for children rendered as a testing ground. The author denounces how most teachers receive neither sufficient preparation in their graduate schools nor the professional development afterward to meet the escalating challenges in today's classrooms. She demands that be regularly updated with recent reading brain circuit research to promote their perception of different forms of reading instruction. Teachers across the entire elementary school grades need to be provided with demonstrated tools of assessment, prediction, and multidimensional teaching of reading, side by side with digital-driven teaching tools. This may well put an end to the long-standing debate on methods of teaching, reading wars. 2 different approaches to the teaching of reading emerged in the 20th century. The first approach is phonics, which implies that children need first to understand basic elements underlying the alphabetic principle. Words consist of sounds or phonemes, and these sounds correspond to the letters in the alphabet, with rules that are to be learned as the entry to reading. This approach is explicit, and in most cases turns into systematic rules about connecting letters to sounds and decoding different types of words. The other approach is called the whole language, where learning is implicit, in the meaning that children infer decoding rules by themselves, with less focus on English phonemes. It's grounded in engagement in stories, literature, word meanings, and the imagination of the child. Our author wonders why it has to be one approach or the other. Although there is a movement toward balanced reading, on the ground one can only detect incomplete versions of a so-called balanced approach that relates to none. The author favors the whole language approach that entails spending time with children to bring words, stories, and a life of reading enjoyment, as long as they do not preclude a systematic, informed approach to learning the phonemes of the language, the alphabetic principle, and decoding rules. Repetition in the whole language approach, through the lens of cognitive neuroscience, exposes children to various dimensions of language, while establishing the rules for letters and their corresponding sounds, and increasing their knowledge of words, stories, and literature. Letter 8. Building a biliterate brain. The future of the reading circuit requires a deep perception of the limits and possibilities of both the literacy-based circuit and digital-based ones. No discipline is sufficient on its own. They both enrich the sort of knowledge we need to develop. the author draws on the work of the philosopher Nicolas of Cusa, who believed that the best way to choose between two seemingly equal but contradicting perspectives was to assume the stance of learned ignorance, where one strives to understand both positions and then assess and decide the favorable course of action. Marianne conformed to this approach and therefore suggests the development of a biliterate reading brain. Dual language learners, according to studies, are far more verbally flexible than single language learners. That is what Marianne aspires for our young readers, to become expert, flexible code switchers between print and digital mediums now and later between and among the multiple future communication mediums. In school first years, physical books and print should be the principal medium for learning to read and would dominate story time. Students shall also learn to think in a different way on fast-moving screens. Digital devices would be introduced as a medium for coding and programming, or as what the Tufts technology researcher Marina Bears calls the playground for learning a variety of creative digital-based skills, from making graphic art and programming Lego robots to creating GarageBand compositions. No single medium should be favored over the other in any classroom. Concerning more practical problems of online reading, the author refers to another variety of tools that direct students, parents, and teachers to the optimum usage of search engines, how to choose the right search word, and how to assess information to refute biases and false knowledge. Nurturing executive and decision-making skills imperative for online reading is beneficial to all, irrespective of the child's learning style and the medium they use. Last but not least, the literary critic Michael Dearder once said, "Books are home, real, physical things you can love and cherish." The physical realness of books contributes to our ability to enter the space where we can be our true selves, with no prejudgments of our well-established thoughts, opinions, and emotions. So, dear reader, come home. Whether you prefer to read or listen, we have something for you. Visit bestbookbriefings.com now for more summaries.